Hello and welcome to Pets Plus Us, a weekly program of information and stories about the companions in our lives, our pets. I'm Mary DeFranco, your host for Pets Plus Us. Coming up this half hour, Scientific American explains how to handle grief after a pet's death. We have essential summer tips for cats, and do dogs really like when we talk baby talk to them? We will start with the surprising reason your kitty munches on grass. We're going to start with that first. And this is by the Animal Rescue Site. Cat owners often wonder why their kitty friend munches on grass. The reason is simple, although a bit counterintuitive. Cats eat grass because it makes them sick, according to PetMD. Grass makes cats throw up because they don't have the enzymes in their gut to digest it. But when the grass comes up, it brings with it indigestible and sometimes harmful substances. Though the cat probably doesn't enjoy throwing up any more than its owner does, getting rid of questionable food stuff brings relief. All kinds of cats eat grass, be they domesticated, feral, or wild, writes Care 2. Cats are obligate carnivores, which means they must eat meat to stay healthy. In the wild, a cat eats all of its prey, even parts its system can't break down easily. Cats also groom themselves by licking, which means they swallow no small amount of fur. This is tough for their bodies to handle. When they eat grass, it's vomited up and out. The grass that the cat doesn't regurgitate provides fiber, which is good for the digestive system, according to Life with Cats. Fiber adds bulk to the lower gastrointestinal, GI tract, and helps eliminate hard-to-digest items in the large intestine. Grass that stays in the cat's GI tract is also a good source of folic acid. Folic acid is a B vitamin that supports the production of hemoglobin, a protein that ensures the proper infusion of oxygen into red blood cells. For all these reasons, veterinarians tell cat owners not to worry about their pet nibbling bits of the lawn from time to time. The grass needs to be free of pesticides, however. Some vets even recommend that the owner grow a safe, dedicated pot of grass for a cat to chew on. As for the resulting unpleasantness, that's just part of owning a cat. Grass grazing, as it's called, is not dangerous for a cat and is, in fact, beneficial. Indeed, a cat that doesn't find grass to eat might turn to some other bit of greenery that's far more hazardous, like houseplants that are toxic for your cat. Next, Melissa Erickson in Pet Tales Autumn 2017 edition tells us about ridding your cat's fur of mats. She calls it tangled up. If you're a long-haired cat, life can get tangled. If you're a pet owner, removing mats in your cat's hair can bring all kinds of trouble from an unhappy cat to an owner who may get scratched or bitten trying to remove these nasty clumps of hair. First of all, long-haired cats should be considered high-maintenance cats and be cared for just like the little dogs who need grooming appointments every 6 to 8 weeks, said veterinarian Krista Magnifico, founder and chief creative officer at Pawbly.com, a social network for pet people. They should be held, petted, and examined for mats and poor coats daily. They also need to be watched for evidence of hairballs, as grooming long hair may put them at an increased chance of them. As cats get older, develop arthritis, or become overweight or obese, the chances of developing matted hair increase, said Ingrid Johnson, a certified cat behavior consultant and co-director of Paw Project Georgia. It comes down to logistics. They just can't reach their backs, their thighs, and other body parts to groom, says Johnson. Other cats have had dental care and tooth extractions, which make it more difficult to groom themselves. Cats use their teeth, particularly their sharp front incisors, to chew and groom matted hair. If those teeth are gone, it's more difficult for the cat to take care of its own hair, Johnson says. Some cats find it painful to groom. This may be due to dental disease, pain or masses in the mouth, joint pain, or not feeling well due to almost any kind of disease or condition, Magnifico said. Some cats are just born with more hair than they can take care of, including Persians and other smushed nose breeds, or brachycephalic, Johnson said. More than unsightly. In addition to looking unruly, matted hair is uncomfortable for cats and can cause skin irritation, Magnifico said. There are plenty of products on the market to help owners ease out tangles. Johnson likes to start with a dematting comb that has two rows of teeth set wide apart. This lifts out the knots and tangles, she said. For her long-haired feline clients, Magnifico recommends the Furminator. Just like combing a child's hair, start at the bottom and work in small sections. Use one hand or another person's help to hold the fur down near the mat to avoid pulling the cat's skin. Do not wet the mats or give a cat with matted hair a bath before brushing. That will only make the tangle more difficult to remove, Johnson said. Never use scissors. I see accidental cuts all the time. It's never worth risking cutting the cat, Magnifico said. A safer option is to use a set of quiet cordless clippers. Lift the knot and simply zip off the tangle. When to groom? How often do cats need to be brushed? Young, active, content cats may never need grooming. Older, debilitated cats may need it daily, and long-haired, brachycephalic cats may need professional grooming a few times a year. Next, do dogs really prefer baby talk? You might be surprised. Linda Lombardi at National Geographic reports, "Who's a good boy? Who's a good boy?" Scientists investigated whether our pets like the exaggerated tone that many of us use with our canines. A chocolate lab sits attentively on a dock in central Maine. Dogs are very perceptive of human words and the tone in which they're spoken. Few of us can resist using baby talk with our dogs. Next time someone makes fun of you for it, you can tell them that science is on your side. Commonplace among languages around the world, baby talk involves speaking to infants in a high-pitched, exaggerated way. It's thought to help babies learn language, for example, by making vowels clearer and strengthening social bonds with parents. But dogs aren't going to learn to speak, so does it make a difference when we talk that way to them? That's the question posed by a study published this month in the journal Animal Cognition. In the study, scientists asked two people to sit with speakers in their laps that played recordings of their own voices. Dogs, we think, are very sensitive to changes in acoustic properties, things like the gender of the person, the size of the person. So that's why the recordings of the speech always matched the person that was holding the speaker, says co-author Alex Benjamin, a PhD candidate at the UK's University of York. Benjamin and colleagues then recruited 37 pet dogs from York, England. They leashed the pets and brought them into a room with two people where the animals heard two types of recorded speech, a normal conversation tone and dog-directed speech, a sort of equivalent of dog baby talk, with exaggerated intonation and words relevant to the dog, like treat. The team then measured how much time the dog spent looking at each person as the recordings played, as well as how much time the canine spent with each person after being taken off leash. The dog spent more time looking toward the person using dog-directed speech, says Benjamin, and they chose on average to spend more time with the person who had recently been producing this sort of speech register. Know your audience. The results suggest dogs do seem to prefer the canine version of baby talk. But why do we have the impulse to talk to them like babies? Interestingly, we don't. Previous research has found that baby talk and dog talk are slightly different. For example, dog talk doesn't have vowel exaggeration. This makes sense, since we don't expect dogs to learn to say vowels. Parrot owners, on the other hand, do exaggerate vowels when speaking to their birds, some of which can imitate human speech. This suggests that we are sensitive to the linguistic ability of the animal or person we are talking to, says Benjamin, and it's largely unconscious. People don't realize they are doing anything different. To test whether the study dogs were just getting excited by words that they knew, like walk or treat. The scientists also played recordings with mismatched content and intonation. For instance, the canines heard phrases like, "I went to the cinema last night," but said it in a dog voice, or, "Oh, you're such a good dog. Do you want to go for a walk?" said in a flat, boring voice. I did my best. The dogs didn't show preference for either type of mismatched speech, suggesting the results of the first experiment weren't due just to familiar words or tone, but something about the combination of the two. Perhaps dogs use the intonation to initially attend to the speech and then recognize whether the words you are using are related to them or not, says Benjamin. No shame in baby talk. She adds more research is needed to see whether this preference is innate or learned, or some combination of the two. It could be that they respond more to this type of speech when you use it with them as a puppy, so they almost train you to keep using this kind of speech, she says. Juan Yurarenka, a linguist at the University of Maryland, College Park, notes that research on interactions with other animals tells us as much about ourselves as it does about them. It would be interesting to test whether hormones like oxytocin, which facilitates contact in mammals of the same species, may be involved in the processing of baby talk and dog talk, respectively, he says by email. Adds Benjamin, "We're not trying to argue that you have to talk to your dog in baby talk for it to love you. Rather, now you don't have to be embarrassed if you do." Next, 3 summer tips for cats. Karen Nichols in Catster writes, "It's essential to keep your cat comfortable, healthy, and safe in the summer. Our top summer tips for cats include advice on how to ensure your cat drinks enough water, stays groomed, and avoids heat stroke. First, number 1 is hydrate. Make sure your cat has enough water. Just as humans are encouraged to drink lots of water when the weather heats up, so too should cats. Always keep fresh water available in several different spots. I throw ice cubes into our water dishes when it is super hot to ensure that the water stays cool. If you're away from home during the day, freeze a plastic dish of water overnight and put it out in the morning. The ice will melt during the day, providing a continual source of cool water. During hot weather, consider adding an additional water source by putting a water dish in the bathtub or sink, with water slowly dripping into it, and train your cat to use it as a water dish. Consider a cat fountain with an add-on reservoir, which ensures your cat will have a continual source of fresh water. Many drink-well fountains have the option of adding a reservoir. What to remember about cat hydration. Senior cats have special hydration needs. It's especially important to keep senior cats hydrated. They often have compromised kidney and thyroid functions, and keeping them hydrated can save you a trip to the vet. Like many geezer cats, my 18-year-old Rocky will nap all day, looking like a melted pool of butter, not stirring to eat or drink. I make a point every hour or two to take the water dish to him and encourage him to drink, which he usually does. Eliminate unhealthy water sources. When your cat is thirsty, she'll try drinking anything, whether it's safe for her or not, so eliminate any dangerous sources of water. Indoors, this might include a toilet if you use chemical self-cleaners, or if family members are lax about flushing, so keep the lid down. Outdoors, empty any standing water receptacles that can harbor dangerous bacteria and parasites. External hydration. Not necessarily popular with cats, but it does provide a temporary respite from the heat. Soak a medium-sized towel with water until it's saturated. Drape it around your cat, then squeeze out the towel's water onto the cat and rub it a bit so that the water reaches the skin. The towel method is less traumatic than a bath and quicker and easier to administer. Number 2 on our list is Furminate. Keep your cat groomed. With each heat wave, your cat's body is likely to shed mountains of fur. This is prime hairball season, so take care to groom your cat daily with a de-shedding tool. There have been cases where hairballs the size of baseballs were removed from the stomachs of cats, and most of these cases were preventable with regular grooming. Signs of a major hairball problem and possible impaction are retching, inability to poop, diarrhea, loss of appetite, or a swollen abdomen. See your veterinarian immediately if you suspect your cat is impacted with a furball. And three, educate. Keep an eye out for heat stroke in cats. Keep tabs on your cats during hot weather and monitor them for signs of heat stroke. Take a minute or two to educate yourself about the symptoms and emergency treatment for hyperthermia. Heat stroke is life-threatening, and knowing proper first aid can save your cat's life. The symptoms of heat stroke in cats include rapid panting, bright red tongue, red or pale gums, thick, sticky saliva, depression, weakness, dizziness, vomiting, sometimes with blood, diarrhea, shock, and coma. Think your cat has heat stroke? What to do? If you suspect that your cat is a victim of heat stroke, take her temperature. It should be between 100.5 and 101.5 Fahrenheit. A temperature above 104 is a definite warning sign of hyperthermia. According to Drs. Foster and Smith, a cat with moderate heat stroke, body temperature from 104 to 106 Fahrenheit, can recover within an hour if given prompt first aid and veterinary care. Normal body temperature is 99.5 to 102.5. Severe heat stroke, body temperature over 106, can be deadly, and immediate veterinary assistance is needed. If you believe that your cat is suffering from heat stroke, you must first take immediate measures to cool her down. Move her to a cool area. Apply wet cold towels or immerse in cool water. Apply ice packs to the head. Remove the cat from the hot area immediately. Prior to taking him to your veterinarian, lower his temperature by wetting him thoroughly with lukewarm water, then increase air movement around him with a fan. Caution. Using very cold water can actually be counterproductive. Cooling too quickly and especially allowing his body temperature to become too low can cause other life-threatening medical conditions. The rectal temperature should be checked every 5 minutes. Once the body temperature is 103, the cooling measures should be stopped and the cat should be dried thoroughly and covered so he does not continue to lose heat. Even if the cat appears to be recovering, take him to your veterinarian as soon as possible. He should still be examined since he may be dehydrated or have other complications. Allow free access to water or a children's rehydrating solution if the cat can drink on his own. Do not try to force feed cold water. The cat may inhale it or choke. What cats are most at risk for heat stroke? Keep in mind that cats who suffer from heat stroke once increase their risk for getting it again, and steps must be taken to prevent it on hot, humid days. Snub-nosed or brachycephalic cats, cat breeds like Persians and Himalayans are especially vulnerable. And finally, pet loss. Why do we need to take pet loss seriously? How to handle grief after a pet's death, and why we all need to change our attitudes about it. This was written by psychologist Guy Winch, May 22, 2018, in Scientific American. He says Doug's amateur soccer team had just lost their playoff game and he needed a pick-me-up. So he decided to stop by the local animal shelter on his way home. He was by no means looking to adopt an animal, but puppies always put a smile on his face. Rookie mistake, he told me in our psychotherapy session. You set foot in one of those places and no way, you're not leaving with a puppy. Delia, the puppy in question, was a five-month-old mutt. I had her for 17 years, Doug said, wiping tears from his eyes. Almost my entire life. I knew it would be rough when she died, but I had no idea. I was a total wreck. I cried for days. I couldn't get any work done. And worst of all, I was too embarrassed to talk to about it to anyone, even my old soccer teammates who loved Delia. I spent days at work, crying in private and muttering allergies whenever someone glanced at my puffy eyes. Losing a beloved pet is often an emotionally devastating experience. Yet as a society, we do not recognize how painful pet loss can be and how much it can impair our emotional and physical health. Symptoms of acute grief after the loss of a pet can last from 1 to 2 months, with symptoms of grief persisting up to a full year on average. The New England Journal of Medicine recently reported that a woman whose dog died experienced broken heart syndrome, a condition in which a person's response to grief and heartbreak is so severe they exhibit symptoms that mimic a heart attack, including elevated hormone levels that can be 30 times greater than normal. While grief over the loss of a cherished pet may be as intense and even as lengthy as when a significant person in our life dies, our process of mourning is quite different. Because pet loss is disenfranchising, many of the societal mechanisms of social and community support are absent when a cherished pet dies. Few of us ask our employers for time off to grieve a beloved cat or dog, as we fear doing so would paint us as overly sentimental, lacking in maturity, or emotionally weak. And few employers would grant such requests were we to make them. Studies have found that social support is a crucial ingredient in recovering from grief of all kinds. Thus, we are not only robbed of crucial support systems when our pet dies, but our own perceptions of our emotional responses are likely to add an additional layer of emotional stress. We may feel embarrassed and even ashamed about the severity of the heartbreak we feel and consequently hesitate to disclose our distress to our loved ones. We might even wonder what is wrong with us and question why we are responding in such disproportional ways to the loss. Feeling intense grief that is then layered with shame about these feelings not only makes pet loss a bigger threat to our emotional health than it would be otherwise, it complicates the process of recovery by making it more lengthy and complex than it should be. Further, given our societal attitude that invokes responses such as, it's just an animal and you can just get another one, we are likely to overlook the variety of ways our lives are impacted by pet loss, both real, practical, and psychological, which can blind us to steps we need to take in order to recover. Losing a pet can leave significant voids in our life that we need to fill. It can change our daily routines, causing ripple effects that go far beyond the loss of the actual animal. For example, whether they are trained or not, all pets function as therapy animals to some extent. Cats, dogs, horses, and other cherished pets provide companionship. They reduce loneliness and depression, and they can ease anxiety. Thus, when we lose them, we actually lose a significant and even vital source of support and comfort. Caring for our pet also lets us develop routines and responsibilities around which we often craft our days. We get exercise by walking our dog, and we socialize with other dog owners at the dog runs, parks, and beaches. When our dog dies, we might experience a significant drop in casual social interaction and feel left out of the unofficial community of dog owners to which we belonged. We awake early every day to feed our cat, or we are woken by them if we forget, but we get a lot more done because of it. Without our cat, we might experience a real drop in productivity, or we spend hours over the weekend out of the city so we can ride our horse and find ourselves going stir crazy when our horse is no longer around. Losing a pet thus disrupts established routines that provides us with structure, support our emotional well-being, and give our actions meaning. This is why, in addition to emotional pain, we feel aimless and lost in the days and weeks after our pet dies. Lastly, we often consider ourselves parents to our pets and are even known as such in our communities. Everyone who owns a dog knows that neighbors on the street are far more likely to know our dog's name than they are to know ours. When our dog dies, we can become invisible and lose a meaningful aspect of our identity. We post images and videos of our animals on social media and are followed for that reason. Losing a pet can impact many aspects of our own identities. Recovering from pet loss, as in all forms of grief, requires us to recognize these changes and find ways to address them. We need to seek social support from people we know will understand and sympathize with our emotional pain and not judge us for it. Our best bet is to reach out to people we know who have also lost pets, as they are likely to understand our anguish and offer the best support. Many animal clinics offer bereavement groups for pet owners. We also need to fill the voids the loss has created in our lives, and there are more of them than we might realize. We might need to reorganize our routines and daily activities so we don't lose the secondary benefits we derived from having our pet. For example, if our exercise came from walking our dog, we need to find alternative ways to reach our daily step goals. If our social media reach was built on our cat's starring Instagram popularity, we need to find other ways to remain relevant, social media-wise. If we spent most Saturday mornings with our Visla meetup group, we need to find other outlets through which we can socialize and enjoy the outdoors. If we were known in our neighborhood as Delia's dad, as Doug was, we need to find other ways of feeling connected and involved in our community. Doug suffered far more than he should have because of the shame and isolation he experienced. It's time we gave grieving pet owners the recognition, support, and consideration they need. Yes, it is up to us to identify and address our emotional wounds when our pet dies, but the more validation we receive from those around us, the quicker and the more complete our psychological recovery would be. And that will do it for this week. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. I hope you enjoyed the program. Thanks for listening. Please join me next time. And don't forget, please spay and neuter your pets. It's healthy for them and the environment. Pets Plus Us is a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. If you'd like more information about this program or to hear this program again, visit our website at wxxi.org/reachout. I'd also like to invite you to share your pet story with us by writing to us at reachout@wxxi.org.